All right, so today let's dive into some machine learning. We've got some really interesting stuff to unpack. You sent over some fascinating material on K-means clustering,
Yes.
and it seems like we're going to be focusing on how it can be used with images of handwritten digits.
Yeah, it looks like you're interested in how this algorithm tackles the MNIST dataset. It's quite a popular one, especially for people getting into image recognition.
Exactly, yeah. Tens of thousands of handwritten digits, and we're going to see if a computer can make sense of them. It's like, imagine if we could train a computer to just understand anyone's handwriting, no matter how messy it is.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. It's all about teaching a computer to see patterns in these images and then group similar ones together.
Okay. So the main goal here is to cluster similar images together. Like if you had a giant pile of socks and you wanted to sort them into matching pairs, but you had a computer to do it for you based on what they look like instead of actually touching them.
That's a very helpful analogy, yeah. At its core, K-means clustering is all about partitioning data into what we call K-clusters. And each image, in this case, gets assigned to the cluster whose mean or cluster center is closest to it.
Cluster center. So stick with the sock analogy. That's like finding the most average sock in each pile, right? The one that best represents all the others in the group.
Precisely. And the algorithm doesn't just pick these centers randomly either. It iteratively refines them, moves them around to make sure the overall distance between all the images and their assigned cluster centers is as small as possible.
Wow, okay. I'm looking at this Python code snippet you've included here. Akastrain25pi0.reshape-1784. Can you walk me through what's going on here?
Sure. This is a key step. It's called data pre-processing. Dividing by 255 point sear, that's normalizing the pixel values. We're making sure they fall between 0 and 1. This makes sure that features with larger ranges don't mess with the algorithm's calculations, make them unbalanced. And then reshaping, well, we're basically transforming each 28 by 28 pixel image into a single vector of 784 values.
Yeah.
That way it's easier for the algorithm to handle.
So each image becomes this like long string of numbers that the computer can then work with.
Right.
And then further down, there's this line, kmeans.fitxtrain. Is this where the algorithm actually learns how to cluster the images?
Yes, this is the exciting part. You could say this is where the magic happens. This is the training phase. The algorithm takes the pre-processed image data, which is Xtrain, and figures out the best spots for those cluster centers. It also assigns each image a label based on its nearest cluster center.
Got it. Now, there's also this really interesting visual you included of the 30 cluster means. They kind of look like blurry, digit-like shapes. What's the significance of these?
Ah, those are cool, right? They actually represent the algorithm's interpretation of the average image within each cluster. It's a way to visualize what the algorithm thinks are the most important central characteristics of each group of digits.
Interesting. Okay. Now, there's this entropy concept that keeps popping up in the code. I have to admit, I'm a little fuzzy on what entropy means in this context.
Sure. Entropy is essentially a measure of disorder or randomness. In clustering, we use it to see how pure the clusters are. Like, imagine a cluster with only images of the digit 7. That would be a low entropy cluster because it's very organized, right?
Okay, that makes sense. So a low entropy cluster means the images in it are very similar to each other.
Exactly. And building on that, there's this idea of information gain, which is calculated using entropy. It tells us how much more organized the data is after clustering. How much less uncertain we are about a digit's identity after we've grouped similar images together.
So a high information gain is good then.
Generally, yes. It means our clustering did its job. It grouped similar images, reduced randomness, making it easier to predict what a digit is based on its cluster.
Okay, so looking at the results here, original entropy 3.32, weighted cluster entropy 1.05, information gain 2.27. What's the takeaway message from these numbers?
Well, the original entropy, 3.32, that's the initial randomness of the data set. Before we did any clustering, after we run key means, the average entropy of the clusters goes down to 1.05. This drop and the positive information gain tell us the clustering was successful. The data set is less random now, and we're better at predicting digits based on their cluster.
It's pretty amazing how this algorithm finds patterns in all this data.
It is.
Now, I'm curious about, so we've been talking about using 30 clusters for this K-means example, but what if we change that number? What happens then?
Oh, that's a really good question. The choice of K, like how many clusters we use, that's one of the big decisions you have to make when you're using K-means. It's not like a one-size-fits-all kind of thing.
Right. It's not just picking a random number.
Nope, not at all. If we made K bigger, if we used more clusters, we might end up with clusters that are more pure. Each one would have even more similar images, right? And that could lead to lower entropy in each cluster.
Okay, so more clusters could mean more organized groups. Like instead of having a few piles of socks that are all mixed up, you have a separate drawer for each type of sock.
Exactly. That's a great way to think about it. But there's a catch. If we have way too many clusters, we might run into a problem. It's called overfitting.
Yeah.
Basically, the algorithm gets so focused on the specific training data, it's like it forgets how to deal with new images. It's like having a drawer for every single sock you own. Super organized, but not very practical.
So how do you find that sweet spot for K? How many clusters is just right?
It's a bit of a balancing act. We need enough clusters to capture the structure of the data, you know, the different types of digits, but not so many that it can't handle new data. There are some techniques, like the elbow method and silhouette analysis, that can help us try different K values and see which one works best.
This is making me think about how we even know if our clusters are good in the first place. How can we measure how well a K-means algorithm is performing?
Well, there are different metrics we can use. One that's pretty common is the silhouette score. It measures how well separated the clusters are and how similar the data points are within each cluster.
So the silhouette score basically gives us a number that tells us how good the clusters are.
Right. It lets us compare different clustering results and see which K value gives us the most meaningful clusters, you know, the ones that are well defined.
Wow, there's a lot more to K-means clustering than I realized. It's really cool to see how these math concepts help us find patterns in all this data, data that seems really complex at first glance.
And remember, this is just the beginning. We're focused on images here, but K-means clustering can be used with so many other types of data, like customer segmentation and marketing, or even gene expression analysis in bioinformatics. The possibilities are huge.
Yeah, that's what's so exciting about machine learning. There's always something new to learn. But for now, let's stick with our current deep dive. I'm really interested in how K-means actually figures out which data point goes in which cluster. What's the logic behind that?
It all comes down to distance. Basically, each data point is assigned to the cluster whose center is closest to it. We usually use Euclidean distance. Maybe you remember that from geometry. It's basically measuring the straight line distance between each data point and the cluster centers.
So it's like each cluster center is trying to pull in the data points closest to it.
Exactly. That's a good way to picture it. And this process of assigning data points and then moving the cluster centers, that keeps going until the clusters stop changing, until we have a nice clean separation of the data.
It's really amazing how such a simple idea can lead to such powerful results. Speaking of powerful results, I'm looking back at the code and there's this part that defines functions for calculating entropy.
Yeah.
Can you explain what those functions are doing and how they fit into the whole clustering process?
Of course. Those functions are basically measuring the level of disorder within each cluster. Remember how we said a cluster with a mix of different digits would have high entropy, and a cluster with mostly one type of digit would have low entropy? Well, these functions calculate the entropy for each cluster and compare it to the original entropy of the whole data set. That way, we can see how well the algorithm is grouping similar images together.
So those entropy calculations help us see how pure our clusters are. We want clusters with low entropy, right? Because that means they mostly contain images of the same digit.
Exactly. And the difference between that original entropy and the average entropy of all the clusters, that's what we call information gain. A big information gain means that the clustering process really cleaned things up. It made the data set much less random.
Got it. That makes things clearer. Now, I'm curious about how those blurry digit-like shapes the cluster means, how do those relate to the idea of entropy? Are they directly affected by those entropy calculations?
That's a great observation. The cluster means themselves aren't directly calculated from entropy, but they do visually show us how pure each cluster is. A cluster with low entropy, meaning it's well organized, it'll probably have a cluster mean that looks a lot like a specific digit, and a cluster with high entropy that's more mixed, it'll have a cluster mean that's harder to make out because it's representing a bunch of different digits.
So the visual clarity of the cluster means can give us a quick idea of how well the algorithm is doing.
Exactly. It's another tool we can use to understand what's happening with the K-means clustering.
Now, I'm curious about, you know, thinking about all this, it strikes me how we keep using the word average when we talk about cluster centers.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is kind of a simplified way to think about it.
Right, because it's not like we're just finding the average height of a group of people or something simple like that. These cluster centers, they're representing the average of, like, really complex visual features, right?
Exactly. We're talking about finding a point in a space with tons of dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
All these image features, they create this complex space, and we're finding a representative point in that space.
So it's more like finding the center of gravity for each cluster in this like multi-dimensional world.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It helps to visualize how the algorithm balances everything out, all the features get taken into account, and then it finds the best point to sum up the whole group of images.
But this makes me wonder about the limits of using average to represent these clusters. Are there times when this approach misses some of the complexity of the data?
You're hitting on a really important point. That's one of the key things to think about when you're using k-means clustering. If you've got data that's super complicated, you know, where the clusters have weird shapes, then a single center point might not cut it. It might not be enough to accurately represent them.
So maybe in those cases, k-means isn't the best clustering tool for the job.
It might still be useful, but you got to be mindful of what it can and can't do. There are other clustering algorithms out there that are better at handling those more complex cluster shapes.
This deep dive has been really eye-opening. I feel like I have a much better understanding of the finer points of k-means clustering now.
Me too.
We've gone from the basics, like cluster centers and entropy, to figuring out the best K and how to see if it's working well.
Yeah, and we've just scratched the surface. Machine learning is a huge field. There's so much more out there.
Definitely makes me want to keep learning more. But for today, I think we've given our listeners a good foundation in how k-means clustering works, especially when you're analyzing handwritten digits.
Absolutely. We've walked through how the algorithm groups images, how entropy helps us measure how pure those groups are, and how those cluster means, those visual representations, can give us insights into how the algorithm is interpreting everything.
And I think the most important takeaways are how to choose the right K, that number of clusters, and how to evaluate how well the whole thing is working.
Right on. Machine learning is powerful, but it's not magic. It's about understanding the ideas behind it and knowing the limits of each algorithm.
Well said. I think that's a great place to wrap up our deep dive today. We've taken everyone on a journey into the world of k-means clustering.
It's been fun exploring this with you.
And to all our listeners out there, keep on learning. There's so much to discover in the world of machine learning. Until next time, happy exploring.